The AIBP ASEAN B2B Growth Podcast is a series of fireside chats with business leaders in Southeast Asia focused on growth in the region. Topics discussed include business strategy, sales and marketing, enterprise technology, and innovation.
Hello and welcome to the B2B Growth Podcast, where we sit down with individuals responsible for driving growth within their organizations here in Southeast Asia. My name is YY and I will be your host for today. Today, we have somebody very interesting joining us. And what he's doing is not just specific to the Philippines banking sector, but rather looking at the whole idea of financial inclusion in the region and globally. Without further ado, I'll have Sir Lito Villanueva, the Executive Vice President, Chief Innovation and Inclusion Officer of RCBC, and the Chief Digital Transformation Advisor for the Yuchenko Group of Companies, to introduce yourself. Sir Lito, please.
Thank you so much, YY, and thank you for that very generous introduction. And of course, it's an honor and privilege to be part of this podcast of AIBP, and I'm also very pleased to be sharing some recent insights or some good news about what's happening in the ASEAN region or even in the Philippines pertaining to inclusive digital finance and other digital innovations. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Sir Lito. You know, can you share with us a little bit more about your background, how you got to be where you are today, and what really stoked your interest in driving digital finance, digital financial literacy in your role?
Of course, without disclosing the age, I've been in the business or in this particular field for almost over 20 years. And in fact, my undergrad is not really into finance because my undergrad was on political science, and I have two graduate degrees. Now, one is on Master of Public Administration, where I graduated magna cum laude from the University of Santo Tomas, and another graduate degree on the Master in National Security Administration. And of course, I have executive courses in the University of Cambridge on innovation by design. But the thing is that I was so thrilled with the way things are in so far as having to provide innovations and being able to address some of the pain points of most Filipinos, right? And the thing here is that even prior to me joining, for example, RCBC, I've been with IFC as a consultant and doing quite a number of initiatives, specifically focusing on cross-border transfers, specifically for Mongolia. And I also was with Visa and covering about 34 markets, specifically in Africa region, in Middle East, some parts of Eastern Europe, of course, Asia. And it's, of course, interesting to be able to see various implementations of mobile technology, or that time you were talking about mobile financial services. The word digital is not yet the buzzword in those years, but we were calling it as MSF or MFS, mobile financial services. It was only about 6 or 8 years ago that we started calling it digital financial services, from mobile financial services. And we've seen that that evolution. I've been also involved with the SMA because I was a team from Smart, being the leading telco in the Philippines under PLDT, and pushing. And it was actually the first mobile wallet that was actually launched globally, and that is Smart Money. In fact, Smart Money was the first in the world, the pioneer, even prior to M-Pesa, which was launched in 2004. Smart Money was launched in the year 2000. So we have seen that. I mean, we have seen how technology could actually change the landscape, specifically for developing markets. And we are, in fact, very lucky that Philippines, for example, has a very progressive, dynamic, and forward-looking regulators, and promoting enabling regulatory framework that would further promote innovations towards inclusive digital finance or towards scaling or accelerating inclusive digital finance. And in fact, now we are seeing the fruits of those things wherein the BSP or the Banco Central ng Pilipinas came up with its own digital payments transformation roadmap, wherein it has two outcomes or two goals that by end of 2023 or by end of this year, at least 50% of the financial transactions must be in the form of digital, and 70% of our financial transactions must be in the form of digital, and 50% of our adult Filipinos to be part of the formal financial system. And the good news is that we will be able to meet those twin goals this year. No? So that's why it's a whole of nation approach, whole of nation solution, wherein all stakeholders are in unison towards creating a sustainable digital economy for the Philippines. So, you know, to answer a question as to how I was able to thrive in this field, in this discipline, it's because of those experiences that I had before, you know, with Visa, with IFC World Bank, even with The Economist. I started my career as a senior research associate and associate editor for The Economist, and doing analysis and doing writing, doing all of these things, and being able to really capture the essence and also having to discover what are those pain points and how to address those friction towards having to have that that honest to goodness development in those localities. And I think and practically having to also have the experience with banking, because I also my first banking stint was with Land Bank of the Philippines doing global banking, so doing remittances, cross-border transfers, etc. And yeah, so that's why it's a sum total of all of those experiences. And now that I'm here with RCBC, we've seen the exponential growth of RCBC as well. You know, RCBC used to be used to rank number 8 in terms of assets way back 2019. And the good news is that as of 2022 December, we rank 5th amongst the largest private universal banks in the Philippines in terms of assets. So just imagine from 9th to 5th, right? So it's a major feat. I mean, and of course, we congratulate all the men and women of RCBC, of course, led by our chairperson, Helvi Chentubi, and our present CEO, Eugene Acevedo.
Thank you so much, Salito, for giving that overview. I think I was going to ask you to talk a little bit more about RCBC for our listeners who may not know about RCBC, but I think you've mentioned about your journey of moving it from 8th to 5th in terms of asset sizes, and that's a very sizable move. How about your role as the Chief Digital Transformation Advisor for the Yuchenko Group of Companies? Can you share with us a little bit more about what Yuchenko Group of Companies are to the listeners who may not be familiar with that?
Yes, Yuchenko Group of Companies, or YGC in short, is one of the oldest conglomerates in Asia. And it has quite a number of, of business interests. No? They are into banking, insurance, real estate, renewable energies, construction, education, name it, and practically they have it. And even memorial estate, right? So these are the things that that the YGC would have. And the of course, given that it is run by our very dynamic chairperson, Helen Yuchenko-Di, she saw the need, the necessity of having to push for digitalization inside the conglomerate, right? Because at the end of the day, digital is not just a lip service thing that is just being discussed in boardrooms and having that very limited airtime, but it is now a must have for everyone, right? So having to even, orient or educate, quote unquote, the members of the board of every company inside YGC on digital transformation and being able to imbibe it, not just knowing it, but practically practicing it, right? So because, you really have to embrace digitalization for you to be able to appreciate that. And you'll be surprised that while most of our members of the board of directors would be seeing, these are people who are in their senior years, but of course seasoned, and because of their expertise and experience in various fields, they are part of our respect of our various boards. But you'll be surprised that they are being educated as well in their homes by their grandchildren or their younger children about digital, about having to use your mobile app, etc. And these now saw that it is really a necessity, right? It's not just it used to be a special project in most of the companies prior to the pandemic. But because of the global health crisis, practically not just banks, but practically across all segments and sectors or industries, they have seen the relevance, the impact, and the necessity of having to adapt to digital transformation. And that is actually, again, it is really part and parcel of the survival of any enterprise.
I understand. I like how you've mentioned, so it has moved from a good to have to kind of a need to have in any organization. But I think when we look at innovation or we look at digital transformation, it means different things to different people. So I'm quite curious, in your role at both RCBC and at YGC, what does innovation mean to you and the team? And how do you measure success of innovation efforts?
Very good question. Innovation is not a monopoly of one person. I may be the chief innovation inclusion officer for the company, but it doesn't mean that it has to emanate from me all the time. Every employee, regardless of rank, regardless of age, regardless of gender, in any organization, has to be an innovator, because innovation is about collaboration. Innovation is about community. Innovation is about sharing. Innovation is about, partnerships, right? So innovation is not just inside the company. Innovation is also externally, right? So you have to, you have to partner with quite a number of entities, and even, sectors or industries that may not necessarily be aligned with your industry. Because having to discover what would be the solution to these pain points being experienced by your target market would be something of value to them. Because at the end of the day, it's about value, finding your value in the chain and in that value chain, right? So in having to really realize that being different or being standing out from the clutter, or and having to have that UVP or unique value proposition, as we call it, would be would make you really thrive and survive in a very competitive landscape, right? So that's why innovation for me is something that has to be has to be nurtured. Innovation is something to be shared across everybody, and innovation is something that has to be so simple. It doesn't have to be so complicated, because you are not in your office or you're not in your organization to impress people. You are not there to wow people. You are there to let people understand your message, understand what you are communicating. And if you can actually make complex things simple, then you are successful. If you can make complex things simple and understood easily by your target market, and you can actually do it with speed and scale and traction, then you are successful. Because it's not about supply-driven proposition, it's about demand-driven proposition. Because you are not there to, you know, you may have the sexiest app in the world, you may have the most robust platform in the world, but if no one is using it, because there is disconnect in the first place with your target market, then it is a failure. But again, failure, as they say, is not fatal, right? Because failure will definitely make you much stronger and be able, and for you to be able to stand up every time you fall and be able to recalibrate and tweak that feature or that product and ensure that as you go along, you can now improve the customer journey. Because remember, you are not there to launch a product in full, meaning you don't wait for the time that, hey, we cannot launch the product because we're just 80% done or 50% done or 90% done. You know, you can launch it and you can actually iterate it along the way, because you wouldn't know that even if you're 100% sure already that you can launch it now, you know, by the time you launch it commercially or publicly, the moment, you know, you will definitely hear feedback from your customers and you will again go back to the drawing board or, you know, into your in your war room to make sure on how to tweak some of those features, right? So, I mean, let your customers be part of your iteration process or your, that's part of agility or being agile, right? So you just have to be flexible and you always have to put yourself into customers. You always have to empathize with your customers. Because for example, I've been telling my people, I mean, you really have to put, you have to, don't wear your hats as product manager or as operations head or marketing head, etc. Always put yourself as the customer. So what are the nuances? What are those pain points? What are those things that will make them happy? And what are those things that will make them use your product?
I understand. I like how you've mentioned, so innovation is not centered on one person. You have to democratize innovation so anybody can come up with good ideas. I also liked how you've mentioned it's not so much supply driven. The best product may not win the entire market. It's really about the demand driven, right? You need to create a product, develop an MVP, and then reiterate this whole process with your customers and taking a very customer driven approach. I like that very much. If I could ask a more difficult question, you know, we've talked a lot about how 2023, it's a more challenging economic climate where resources may be a little bit stretched in order to do all the innovative efforts that that we would want to do. How does the team actually kind of prioritize what kind of efforts would take priority or will take precedence in a climate like this?
Yes, you're right. 2023 is a very challenging year for everyone globally because of high inflation, because of geopolitics and lack of economic uncertainties, right? And definitely, it's really more about having to assess which of those things that would be prioritized by your organization or by your group or by your team. Because, you know, without you having to look so far, there are quite a number of low-hanging opportunities before your very eyes, right? So, I mean, this is something that, you know, you wouldn't even pay attention to or wouldn't be aware of because, you know, you're so mesmerized or so preoccupied with quite a number of other non-priority items, as we may call it. But the thing is, there are quite a number of low-hanging opportunities which you could, without you having to invest so much, it is a matter of tweaking something and being able to capture that particular segment, right? So again, it's really more of, again, having to have that 360-degree perspective, no, of those opportunities and being able to scan the environment on which are the things that would really matter to your customers and what would really make, that value not just for your company, not just for your group or your team in terms of having to achieve that financial metrics for you, but also how would that impact the lives of those people whom you are trying to tap.
Understand. If I could, I'd like to dive into your other roles, because beyond just driving, say, the digital transformation at YGC or the being the Chief Innovation and Inclusion Officer at RCBC, you wear many other hats. And I'm very curious, you know, part personally, how you actually manage your time. But tell us more about your other roles. I believe you are also working together with quite a number of organizations, including being the head of the FinTech Alliance, the chairman of FinTech Alliance, PH. And you're also the chairman of the Alliance of Digital Finance Association globally. Can you share with us a little bit more about these roles and how does it all come together for you?
Yes, I think I have more than 24 hours a day to be able to attend to this demands, right? So yes, I wear multiple hats, and then of course I just spoke about the my stint my stint in RCBC and the organization that pays my salary, but those organizations that do not pay my salary, but it's more of how do you say it? It's more of advocacy oriented and more of policy, not really policy, but it's more of being able to advocate for policies that would support the industry. It's something of value definitely to everyone in the ecosystem, right? So I'm the founding chairman of FinTech Alliance.ph, and that is the organization, the largest digital organization in the Philippines, with over 80 corporate members. And collectively, it now contributes to over 90% of financial digital transactions in the Philippines today, right? And of course, from startups to unicorns, these are companies, digital or fintech companies, that comprise the FinTech Alliance.ph. And we are being tapped by regulators, government agencies, even policymakers, including legislators, when coming up with initiatives such as regulatory, legislative issuances or bills in both houses of Congress that would impact on how we are how collectively we could promote. Digital economy in the Philippines, right? So in terms of digitalization, in terms of having to push for some reforms when it comes to cybersecurity, consumer awareness, etc. And FinTech Alliance was also the first organization in the ASEAN region that came up with an industry-led code of conduct and code of ethics. This is, again, to support the regulators in terms of having to police the ranks amongst fintech players to ensure that there is massive campaign when it comes to consumer protection, right? So that's why every member who is applying, or every company who is applying for membership of FinTech Alliance would have to go through a scrutiny in the membership committee in terms of proper vetting, in terms of them having to comply with all documentary requirements. In fact, some of those companies that have been applying for membership with us, they've been telling us that we are more stringent than regulators. Because again, we are aspiring to become an SRO or a self-regulating organization. And of course, we have to make sure that every member of the organization is definitely deserving or fully vetted by the industry, right? And in fact, there was one case where we had to expel one member of the alliance because of gross violation of the Data Privacy Act. So that's how we can, again, FinTech Alliance is not a social club. It is not meant just to have parties or to have whatever, but it's really more about, about policies, about reforms, about advocacies, and about having to support government to further promote financial inclusion and digital economy.
Understand.
And then the next item is me being also the first chairman to be elected by the South Africa-based Association of Digital Finance Associations. And majority of those members are fintech associations that are based in Africa. So, and the good thing here is that this you know, Alliance of Digital Finance Associations has been a, you know, is also comprised of other members of the board who are part of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, or even other developing development agencies, no? Or international development agencies for in Africa. And yeah, so that's why we are also you know, excited about how we can, you know, we can help each other in the industry on having to showcase some of the global best practices. And also, you know, learn from various markets and how it could be applied in a part in markets that would, you know, that that would really need those innovations, right? Again, it's not about, you know, not just having a one model type of implementation in across all markets, but it's really more of which are those models could really be something that could, you know, that could be tweaked or that could be repackaged, it could be you know, reassessed, and how it could now conform with a particular market in terms of nuances, in terms of culture, in terms of behavior, etc. So those things. So that's why the exchange of ideas and experiences amongst those members would definitely be of value to everyone.
Understand. In your experience, right, how, under what circumstances do public-private partnerships work the best? You've talked a bit more about how, you know, you've very thankful to BSP and being very forward-thinking in driving financial inclusion. What are some of the factors that you see in your roles that really help to make the circumstance perfect for public-private cooperation when driving financial inclusion?
Yes, for you to be able to successfully drive financial inclusion or scale inclusive digital finance, it's really about PPP or public-private partnership. Because again, the private sector cannot do it alone, nor the government can do it alone. It is really a synergy of sorts. It's really about collaboration. It's about fusion of forces, right? And how to and how that combined forces would now be able to provide that development or support to that, to those sectors, right? So, for example, for RCBC Manibela, Barangay Banking, even, you know, even the governor of the Banco Central ng Pilipinas, the Secretary of Finance, and all the other government agencies through their support towards that initiative. And again, it's all about having to have that collaboration, even not just from the national government agencies, but as well as with local government units. And now we're actually going around the country, and in all of those barangays, we are now being able to to reach them. And remember, in the Philippines, we are comprised of more than 7,107 islands, right? And the thing here is that you have quite a number of geographically isolated and disadvantaged, or even conflict areas where banking may be an issue or a concern. So we are, you know, the only bank right now in the Philippines that has the most extensive reach in the Philippines, covering all 82 provinces, using our ATM Go handheld devices. Because more than 60% of our financial transactions being transacted in the RCBC ATM Go terminals are pantawid, are CCT grants coming from government. So just imagine, without them having to go to travel, you know, up a minimum of 10 kilometers to the nearest town to withdraw cash from any brick and mortar ATM. You know, these ATM Go terminals are actually situated in their communities. We call it neighborhood ATMs, where they could not just withdraw cash, but they could also transact, such as get their e-load or pay their bills or do fund transfers and even deposit or cash in and even take out a loan or apply for a loan using that facility. So, I mean, this is something of value for, you know, for all our partners. And it's really, again, providing that convenience.
I understand. You know, Salito, we've talked a lot about like the opportunities there, right? AIBP, Arts and Innovation Business Platform, we actually do this annual Enterprise Innovation Survey, where we look at challenges in digital transformation. So one of the challenges that enterprises in Southeast Asia have mentioned in their digital transformation journey, it's really about cybersecurity and privacy concerns. And this was something new that we discovered last year. As I guess the enterprises become more mature, this becomes more of an issue. You've shared also about your interest in like building digital trust. Can you share with us a little bit more about your perspective on, say, cybersecurity and how it links to digital inclusion?
Well, that has been a concern of all, right? It is not, it is not just confined in banks or fintechs, but it's practically confined across value chain or that ecosystem. Because even, for example, even customers, right? The main, because even the customers have to be educated when it comes to cybersecurity, right? Because in most cases, the causes of fraud would emanate from customers, right? For example, them not knowing that they are actually sharing their one-time passwords, right? So they are being fooled by whoever would be sending their SMS or emails to them or some what we call the smishing or spit and this quite a number of fraudulent activities or acts by fraud actors. I mean, in most cases, it would emanate from the customers because again they are not even aware of and they're easily fooled, right? Or gullible, right? And that's how sophisticated hackers are, or more how sophisticated this cyber criminals are in being able to really fool our customers. But the thing is that we have to put so much premium on consumer education, specifically on how they could protect themselves with those hackers, in how they can have that digital hygiene, as we call it, right? On how it will not just be the banks or fintech players that would have to be doing its job in terms of having to protect its definitely protecting its system, protecting its platforms, and having to provide that premium on consumer education. But again, you really have it's an ecosystem. It's the whole of nation approach in terms of having to provide that that education or awareness, right? Because I mentioned digital trust. I mean, this is something that that has to be embraced by everyone, especially the players in the industry, and how to even making sure that it redounds to the benefit of every consumer that you have, right? So again, we are all the players are united when it comes to combating fraud, combating cyber crimes. And in fact, again, this is not just the players themselves, but also the regulators, as well as consumers, media, etc. So everybody should be involved in terms of having to further protect every consumer.
Well, thank you very much for your insights, Alito. One last concluding question. We've talked a lot about ASEAN as a bloc, and this is something that we look at the growth story of Southeast Asia. One of the things that many people are very excited about is the ASEAN cross-border linkage, where payments, digital payments, can now travel across Southeast Asia easily. What are your thoughts around that, and what are some of maybe your perspectives about growth in Southeast Asia?
Yes, I mean, there's so much good things happening now in the ASEAN region, and one of those would be that MOU signed amongst governors of central banks from various ASEAN member countries, and starting with five, right? And the thing here is that the good initial step is that amongst regulators, they have agreed on having to come up with that sort of a consortium-like partnership or collaboration where cross-border transfers would now be able to thrive in this particular ASEAN bloc, right? The thing is that because of digitalization, because of digital payments, etc., especially for Philippines amongst those ASEAN markets, I mean, Philippines would be the fourth biggest inward remittance destination, right? After China, India, Mexico, right, and the Philippines, right, and we're growing our inward remittance volume by as much as 5 to 8%, no, despite the pandemic. So I mean, definitely, the Philippines will benefit so much from this collaboration amongst various central banks in having to promote cross-border transfers or cross-border payments, right? Because remember, it would be a delight for a migrant worker, for example, a Filipino migrant worker in, say, in Singapore or in Indonesia or wherever, just by clicking or tapping their mobile app, they'll be able to send to another mobile app in the Philippines, right? So it's an app-to-app transfer. So that practically now reduces the cost of transfers, and that again would redound to the benefit of the consumers, right? So, because the primary objective is really on how to reduce intermediary cost, and at the same time how to promote that efficiency and convenience in making those digital financial transactions.
Thank you so much, Salito. It's our honor to host you at our ASEAN B2B Growth Podcast, and we look forward to further collaboration with RCBC, with FinTech Alliance PH, and in driving the digital financial inclusion in the Philippines and in Southeast Asia. Thank you very much, Salito.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
We hope you've enjoyed the episode. For more information about business growth in the ASEAN region, please visit our website www.iotbusiness-platform.com.